Ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
People dealing with a mental or behavioral health issue often don't seek medical attention because of the social stigma attached to those conditions. The problem can be especially acute in low-income neighborhoods, where finding the money to pay for extra care can also be a challenge. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to hear from two researchers in UWM's College of Nursing who are working on a program that integrates mental health care and assessments into regular appointments for physical conditions like managing diabetes. Joining us in the studio today is Bev Zobler. She's the assistant clinical professor at UWM and project director, and Nicole Pryor, a behavioral health care manager. Ladies, welcome to today's program. Good to have you with us. And Bev, let's start with you. The whole notion of trying to connect what the mind is doing or not doing in terms of functioning properly and what the body is doing is really the key to really having a healthy person, isn't it?
Correct, yeah. Thank you for having us here today, Tom. And the whole notion of the body-mind connection, we've known in practice for many years that there's mental health ramifications of physical illnesses and vice versa. With mental health problems, often there's physical symptoms also. So the program that we are working with addresses both those areas within the same primary care visit. So when the person comes to the primary care provider, we have the mental health counselor present.
And we should note for listeners that there are two locations where you currently are running this program, and both of them serving people who otherwise might not get any health care at all. Where are they located?
We have two nurse-managed health centers run through the College of Nursing at UWM that are two of the longest standing in the nation. They've been we've been serving the communities at 64th and Silver Spring within the West Lawn Housing Development, and then at the House of Peace on 17th and Walnut for 27 and 32 years, respectively.
Yeah, just an amazing contribution to the well-being of the community.
And again, people living in those areas, there is a great deal of impoverishment. The zip code in House of Peace is 53205, is the poorest in the city of Milwaukee. And when you're living in poverty, most often you're in a survival mode and health goes to the back burner. You worry about your kids, food, shelter, those kinds of things. So that we, the nursing center model, we feel like if we're where people are learning, playing, growing, that we will be able to help them with their health, even when it's not their priority.
And it's not unusual for physicians to bring up the subject of a person's mental well-being in a physical, but in this case, it sounds like you are being particularly proactive in trying to get people to open up and talk about what's their thinking, what's troubling them, as well as the physical ailments that they have.
Well, based on feedback in the community, we did seek this funding to bring this integrated model to the neighborhood centers. And particularly of interest was that this project, we're working with the University of Washington Center, AIMS Center, it's called, for Advancing Integrated Mental Health Solutions. And they have tested an approach to this integrated behavioral health approach that for over 25 years and conducted about 90 clinical trials and shown that they can, for depression and anxiety, they can get results of better mental health for people in a shorter period of time and those than the usual kind of care that we often give in healthcare, and that those results will last up to 2 years they've been able to test out. The other tool that Nicole is using in her practice is what's called from the SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Agency. Again, that's been tested for about 35 years and is used internationally. It's called the Screening and Brief Intervention and Referral to Treatment, and that's for alcohol and substance abuse. So both of those tools and programs that are integrated here rely on screenings of people coming in for their primary care, and based on the screening results is how the care is derived. So that's a unique approach that we're hoping will give people better results than the standard care.
And we should point out that you received $1 million grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to launch this model program here in the city of Milwaukee. So some significant funding going in to this initiative.
Right. It was from the Health Resources and Services Agency, HRSA, which is the federal arm that's dedicated to looking at solutions to providing and improving healthcare access and promoting health equity with underserved populations and vulnerable populations, which again, the for some of the reasons you mentioned earlier, there's just a lot of disparity, and mental health is one of those in our country. So working with that agency, and the other purpose they have is to improve the workforce for caring for the populations. So again, working with the university where we have the nursing students and social work students and all the disciplines, we can prepare that workforce also.
Bev, that's a great background as I now turn to Nicole, because while you've laid out the foundation for why this program is underway and where you're getting the money, Nicole, you're on the front line. You're meeting with the people who walk into these nursing centers, and you're the one who makes this program come alive. What happens, if you could describe to us the experiences that a client would have when they walk into the nursing center, for example, to get their blood pressure checked or to come in and see whether or not they're on track in dealing with that diabetes? How do you begin to open the conversation about what's going on in the mind and not just the body?
Well, because of the way our building is set up, the nursing center has a lobby, and most of the clients come into the lobby. My office is also located inside of the lobby, so I'm one of the first persons that clients see and speak to prior to even getting to the window to speak to the reception staff. And so just having that engagement with them, whether they want to further having services with me from a behavioral health perspective, it still allows me to build those relationships with clients once they come through the front door. The way that our model has worked is that once they go back with the nurse practitioner, I think about one client whose blood pressure was extremely elevated, and so the nurse practitioner brought that client into my office, and we went through some stress management, deep breathing techniques, and maybe talked about a few of his concerns. Once the nurse practitioner returned to retake his blood pressure had decreased slightly. So
even just beginning to get people to talk about what's going on, what are those stressors? What sort of experiences are these people having that would trigger the anxiety or the stress or other problems mentally?
Most of our the population that we serve, they are dealing with a lot of basic need stressors. So we have clients who are looking for employment. Because we are in a Silver Spring neighborhood partnership inside the building, there's a pantry that's right across the hall that most of our population frequent. Even at House of Peace, they come in as guests to get clothing, get food, and even there, we're located right by the bread station, and that's where we engage in conversations, just focusing on their health care needs and if they even know how to navigate their the insurance that they may or may not have. And so
So all of those can contribute to the anxiety that people feel.
Yes. Most people are anxious about housing issues. A lot of clients come in with children, and so they're concerned about their children. Recently, we had a domestic violence client that came in that was concerned about her safety, and we were there as an additional support and to offer resources. So the clients that we serve are basically coming in to have their basic needs met.
Is it usually the case that a lot of these people don't realize that there is a strong connection in terms of their physical well-being to their state of mind? You know, are they slowing down enough to say, hey, there's a reason why I'm so anxious?
A lot of times we have clients that we have to educate and educate them on the symptoms that they are experiencing and to know why they're experiencing those symptoms. As Dr. Zobler stated before, most of our population of people, they live in a low poverty income neighborhood, but they're also living in high crime areas as well. And so they view a lot of crimes, and some of them are victims of crimes. And so a lot of them don't even have the connection between the symptoms of having flashbacks and not being able to sleep, which is common on the assessments that they complete, is that they have a lack of sleep or have problems falling asleep and staying asleep, that's all associated with PTSD disorder versus them always thinking that, oh, that's a military thing. And so just giving them that education and helping them to understand that the symptoms that they're feeling is a normal reaction to some abnormal experiences that they've had.
How tough is it to get people to open up? You know, you say you meet them in the lobby and you look like a delightful person, and I'm sure you're very comforting, but how long does it take for people to get comfortable to begin to share those inner feelings of trauma?
Well, we've had some clients that come in and just simply say, I don't have those issues. So that we see that the negative stigma is still there with the population that we serve. And so...
So there's a defensiveness.
Yes, very much so. And so then I reframe it and ask, so what are some things that's stressing you? And so then that changes the conversation from I'm the behavioral health counselor versus now they want to talk about some things that are stressing them out. And so...
And so the suspicion or the wariness can be alleviated just by being friendly, by
right.
beginning to open that door.
And just building the rapport. And then we've had clients that are still questioning if that's something that they need. And because I have this open door policy, my door is always open. Sometimes they stand in the doorway and just want to have these casual conversations, and that leads to them walking, actually coming inside of the office, and I just slowly close the door and turn on the noise, the white noise machine, and we engage in conversation from that point, and they no longer look at it as it being an actual counseling session, but just that they're in the office able to talk about some stress and to release some of the anxiousness or anger or overwhelmments that they're feeling.
And not being judged.
And not being judged at all, no.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio, Bev Zobler and Nicole Pryor, both with UWM's College of Nursing. And we're discussing a fascinating program that brings together the connection of mental health and physical health in the community nursing centers that are run by UWM's Nursing College. Bev, as project director, can you give us a sense of how you're measuring whether or not this is working? I mean, you have this $1 million grant from the federal government to try out this new system of assessing a person's mental health or well-being as you look at their physical health. How do you know if the experiences that Nicole have just described are going to be long-lasting or worth this sort of investment?
So we have 2 years of funding, and for the direct patient care, we've implemented 4 screening tools that Nicole's having patients fill out, and tracking those numbers will help us see if individuals are improving. And that's part of the collaborative care model with University of Washington, is to actually, she targets those numbers for treatment also. There's intervention with that. So that's how we do it.
So you're cataloging every interaction
As part of the client care, correct, with documentation through the clinic. So the other piece that HRSA is interested in, because these are effective evidence-based strategies that we're implementing, is what does it take to implement this at the nursing centers? And we're part of the funding cohort. We're part of is 11 nursing centers throughout the country. And the other thing we're tracking is what it takes the team to come together to transition to this type of integrated care, to have Nicole so integrated right on site into the team where we can have these facile referrals back and forth. So we're logging the time it's taking for what would they call team huddles, where these exchanges of information go. The clinicians all keep logs for me of the time they're meeting and processing. It's taken time to set up a clinic flow, so they're tracking those kind of things. They also, every 6 months, fill out four questionnaires, the staff themselves, about looking at their interprofessional collaborative practice, how it's evolving. There's a questionnaire for the AIMS model, how that specific collaborative care model is going, so they fill that out for us. And we have two others about the environment, how that's changing for the practice for interprofessional care. And then the last one is the, it's called Ripples, Readiness for Interprofessional Learning. So how is that environment changing as far as the team goes, and particularly as we bring students in, how can we support students?
So there's real rigor here. It's not just providing what sounds like a nice service, but you're really testing to see whether or not this can get traction and whether the investment is going to pay off in the long run. Bev, you mentioned nursing students, and mm-hmm. that's one of the great assets that these clinics have, not only wonderful professors like the two of you and managers in the clinic, but you have students who are soon going to be out in the workforce.
That's right.
How have they involved themselves in this process? Is this exciting, Nicole, to have some of the younger, soon-to-be ordained nurses working alongside you?
It's very exciting having students come in and possibly shadow what we do inside of the nursing center. And a lot of times they engage with other partners inside of Silver Spring Neighborhood Center as well, because we do have daycare and all those other partnerships. So they prepare projects. They work with our clients closely. It's just wonderful having students see the work that we do inside of the community versus a simulated activity that's done in the classroom. So they're actually seeing clients. I know one project that the nursing students do that I love so much is that they become a client and they have to catch the bus to all these different entities and to actually see and walk in another person's shoes and see how it can affect them with getting to their doctor's appointment if they have all these other various appointments. So by the time they reach us at the nursing center, they're exhausted, and then they kind of understand what our clients may be faced with on a day-to-day basis.
And maybe makes them even more empathetic
yes.
when it comes to providing the care that they'll be delivering in their career. Nicole, when you think about the average client who comes in and you see that some of them, as you mentioned earlier, get some relief and get some assistance immediately just by pulling getting the pressure to come off, the steam to come off, if people have feelings bottled up inside them. What about people who need more intensive treatment? Are there resources here in the community that you can steer clients to after you discover that there's something going on?
Yes, we are partnered up with another clinical group who has, they're doing the opposite of what we're doing. We're integrating behavioral health into primary care, and they're integrating primary care into behavioral health. And so we do have a referral source where they have community support programs that are more targeted to clients who have more chronic symptoms and may need additional support.
Because that, Bev, that's essential, isn't it?
Correct.
I mean, you don't want to tell people we're going to help you and get them excited and then suddenly hit a brick wall because there's no place for them to go after the initial assessment.
And in the model we're implementing, Nicole's role is definitely for short-term therapy and the longer term then inappropriate referrals. But part of it for the population we're serving is just getting them engaged, which is, I think, the beauty of having her right on site and working so closely with the other clinicians.
When you think about the nurse practitioners, the nurses, the professionals who are in there working with your clients, is there ever any hesitation or reluctance on their part to go ahead and include this behavioral assessment, or is everybody all on the same page when it comes to making sure that both of these services, mental and physical, are being provided?
We've been real fortunate that our team is very open to the integration, and they have a good, strong background in behavioral and mental health. We've used a trauma-informed care approach at the clinic for many years, even before it was a term, because we recognize that the exposure people have to trauma and the stressors in their lives are huge. And so to acknowledge those and support people. With nursing, that's a part we're trained for emotional support, and it's a part that we honor and value because we look at the whole person. So it wasn't too much of a stretch for our team, but we've, in the nursing center model, we also have permission to practice with the whole person, and that's not necessarily the case in all clinical medical care.
So this is a more systematic approach to getting people to address those mental or behavioral issues at the same time that they're dealing with physical problems.
The analogy I'm making, I think what we're really doing, and Nicole, in using these screening tools, is kind of training people that you know, that there are, you can measure how your mental health is doing, just like we do a blood pressure. We've trained people really well that we know our blood pressure numbers, right? And with these tools Nicole's using, and she knows the numbers better than I, but on this of 10 points, if we're at a 4, we're probably okay. But if I'm nudging up towards a 6 on this scale, I better take some precautions or maybe do that breathing thing she taught me. And then if I'm at an 8, maybe I should call her and have a talk, and then she can refer and such. So again, that's that education piece too. I think that both of the ESPRT, it's called the Screening and Brief Intervention and Referral to Treatment, and the Collaborative Care Model are using these screening tools to help educate and get that self-management, really.
Nicole, in terms of the community, people outside of the clinic, are they becoming aware of this? Do your clients, for example, talk to their friends who may be traumatized, who may be dealing with some enormous stressors in their life, and referring them to you? Are they advertising your work after having experienced the services that you deliver?
I believe that they are passing on the word. We have a high volume of guests that come inside of House of Peace. And so alongside with another nurse case manager, we do an outreach piece. And so our faces are familiar. People know who we are, whether they utilize our services or not. They'll come by our table and get resources, and they know our names. I've had several times I'm called the nurse case manager's name. So I'm Vanessa some days, and Vanessa is Nicole some days. And so just engaging with the both entities and the participants and guests that come inside, they get to know who we are because we're consistent. We're there. We're there every Monday. We're there every Tuesday. And so even if they don't need our assistance at that moment, they know that they can come to us and ask us questions.
Well, and Lord knows there are enough, unfortunately, serious tragic events that occur in the community that mean that stress is a constant, right? It's not
yes.
Something that is occasional, like a bad weather experience. Unfortunately, you're dealing with some social issues that result in enormous trauma for the people living there. So, Bev, how do you know if at the end of this study, it's, again, a 2-year study, funded by the federal government. This $1 million grant is wonderful. But will you know if you're successful at the end of the 2 years?
Well, I'd say we've been successful in getting it implemented, and we'll know more when we have more data at the end of 2 years. And the other piece of the project is if we can keep it sustained, because we don't want to have the service and then take it away. So the goal is to, you know, keep it sustaining. But I think we've already seen some success with the small numbers that we were looking at, with Nicole being there.
In terms of sustaining that beyond the 2 years, does that mean finding other funding sources, or is it possible that the feds will see the success and provide money for continuing this on an ongoing basis?
The dream is other funding sources. So we can look at, we're particularly billing, because all the services Nicole's doing, except for the some of the education piece, is billable. In fact, the ESPRT, the screening and brief intervention and referral, is paid for by Medicaid, is billable. So as we get the credentialing and the trainings and all of that, as we've been getting set up, we can start cycling into more billing. So hopefully we'll be able to show some sustainability also.
Nicole, any burnout by you folks? I mean, you know, again, you're so calm here as you discuss the program, but you are dealing with people who have some really, really serious life issues. How do you sustain yourself and keep yourself up as you hear these folks describe the serious problems that they deal with?
I guess I would like to acknowledge the team that I work with. They are so wonderful and so supportive. There have been situations where I've come out of the office after a client has left, and maybe I'm feeling shook, and just to have them just wrap their arms around me and tell me it's going to be okay. I go for a walk on the track that's located at one of the elementary playgrounds, and just be able to digress and just doing the self-care that I teach my clients, and being an example of doing that. And so I do engage in a lot of self-care, but I'm so thankful to the team that I work with. They are phenomenal. They really support what I'm doing. And so I love going to work.
Well, and we love the fact that both of you are engaged in this terrific project. Bev, Nicole, best of luck, and we'll have you back when you finish up the study and see what those results are. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Bev Zabler and Nicole Pryor, both part of UWM's College of Nursing program, bringing both behavioral and physical health into their community nursing centers. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.